Well, some of you look sleepy because you've been up all night with the election. And I tell you how I did that last night. You just pray about it, vote your conscience. And then I went to bed last night at 10 minutes till 9. That's not unusual. Somewhere between 8:30 and 9 is a great time to go to bed. And so I woke up at 10 minutes till 3 this morning. And so I turned on television and I saw our new governor live. And so he was on one of the channels there, and he was saying, well, the landscape looks like, you know, we'll finish this off. So, you know, I don't stay up all night with that kind of stuff, but I'm glad some of you do. I have to come back in and work, and some of you do as well. So, but I appreciate all of you. Most all of you went out to vote. One thing that I wish people would do, and you can't get them to do this, is I wish people would read the amendments and be prepared to vote before they go to the polls. That's what caused a lot of the backup. There was a heavy turnout, and then people are over there trying to read those amendments one at a time in legalese, and they can't understand them. And the rest of us are standing back in line, and I think it took me 90 seconds to vote. Restore the lines backed up. And when you're in a full-service checkout line, you notice people don't pull out their wallet or their purse and have their debit card, credit card, or money in their hand. They wait till the total on the screen, and the cashier says, that'll be $109.52. And then they go deep sea diving in their purses. That's why you're standing so long in line at the grocery store. So I have some other problems too, but I take they see the total at bedtime for most of them, so you don't have to hear about the less. They've got my medicine titered the best it's ever been. Now tonight I want you to turn to Psalm 145 and then to Psalm 139. We're just going to skip through some of this. Psalm 145, exalt you, my God the King. I'll praise your name forever and ever. Every day I'll praise you and extol your name forever and ever. Great is the Lord and most worthy of praise. His greatness no one can fathom. One generation commends your works to another, and they tell of your mighty acts. They speak of the glory of God. I will serve your majesty, and I will meditate on your wonderful works. They tell of the power of your awesome works, and I'll proclaim your great deeds. I shared with you a message on the holiness of God, one on the sovereignty of God. But tonight I want to share with you about the omniscience, omnipotence, and omnipresence of our mighty God. I was reading the other day a man named Steve Hawking. You've heard the name before. He died in March of this year. He wrote a book several years ago called A Brief History of Time. He was probably the most brilliant physicist who's ever lived. And I want you to know that one book sold over 10 million copies. But I want you to know this. He said this quote, "Women are a complete mystery." Now, I agree with that. And the other thing, he never had a need for God. Here's what he said. He said, "There is no God, and I am an atheist." He said, "We're just an advanced breed of monkeys on a minor planet on a very average star." You know, he said, I regard the brain as a computer, which will stop working when its components fail. And this guy's supposed to be brilliant. He goes on a little bit further and he says, during the time he pursued his unified theory to explain the universe physically and existentially, he says, quote, "One can't help asking the question, why does the universe exist?" And then he went on a little bit further and he said, "The greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance, it's the illusion of knowledge." And then he said, "In the long run, the human race should not have all its eggs in one basket," when he was talking about our planet. And ladies and gentlemen, his name became probably more well known than Albert Einstein. And he studied all this about our universe, and he still didn't believe there is a God. Some of you remember Robert Wells' children's book he wrote years ago, and it's entitled, Is a Blue Whale the Biggest Thing That There Is? And it was used to teach children about animals, the size of the animals. Some of the underfins of the blue whale are bigger than most animals on planet Earth. But here's what he wrote in this book. I just wanted you to hear this. He said, the blue whale isn't anywhere near as big as a mountain. If you could put 100 blue whales in a huge jar, you could put millions of those whales jars inside the hollowed out Mount Everest. He said, but Mount Everest isn't anywhere near as big as the Earth. If you stack 100 Mount Everest on top of one another, it would be a whisker on the face of the Earth. The Earth isn't anywhere big as the sun. You could put 1 million Earths inside the sun. But he said the sun isn't anywhere big as red supergiant star called Antares. You could fit 50 million suns inside Antares. But he said Antares isn't anywhere near as big as the Milky Way galaxy. Billions of stars, including superstars like Antares, make up the Milky Way galaxy. The Milky Way isn't anywhere near as big as the universe. There are billions of other galaxies in the universe, yet filled with billions of galaxies. The universe is almost totally empty. The distances from one galaxy to another are beyond human calculation. Yet we're told in this psalm, the one who created it all spoke it all into being. Psalm 139 and Psalm 146. First of all, let's look at the omniscience of God. This is just phenomenal. We cannot comprehend it. He knows you. He knows me. He knows us individually. Look at that word, omniscient. You can break it down. Omni is a Latin word that means all, and scienter, the Latin word, means to know. All knowing, God knows everything and everything about every one of us. Have you ever been around somebody who's just a know-it-all? If you've ever raised a teenager, you've known a know-it-all before. If you were a teenager, you knew it all at one time. And see, that's what God's like. He knows it all. I heard about a prosecuting attorney in a small town. He was getting ready to try a case. So he stood up and he looked over at the jury box. And he said to a particular lady, he said, do you know me? She said, yes, I know you. And he said, well, how do you know me? She said, I've known you since you were a little boy. And she said, I want you to know that you've cheated on your wife and that you overcharged your clients when you were in a DA. And he said, I want you to know something else. She said, you hadn't amounted to anything but a two-bit paper pusher. And so the DA heard enough about himself, and he looked at the lady again and said, do you know the defense attorney? He said, yeah, I know the defense attorney. She said, I babysat Mr. Bradley when he was an infant. And said, I want you to know he's amounted to absolutely nothing. He's an alcoholic. He's a liar. He womanizes, and he can't talk any woman into marrying him. By that time, the judge, boy, he hammered the gavel down. He called and the defense attorney up there, and he said, you listen, call the DA. If either one of you ask this woman if she knows me, I'll put you both in jail for contempt of court. Don't you love that? Ladies and gentlemen, God knows it all about us. Look at Psalm 139, verse 1. Oh, Lord, you have searched me and known me. That Hebrew word there for search means pierced through us. That means to dig. In other words, God sees right through us. He's got more than x-ray vision. He sees all the way to the bottom of our heart. God also knows, listen to this, God knows what we think. Psalm 139:2. You know when I sit down and when I rise up, you understand my thoughts from afar. You just pray that God controls your thoughts. Sunday morning I was going to approach somebody about somebody else who left our church. And I don't know, I just got a check in my spirit, and then distance separated me asking this person. And then when I went to the service after Sunday school, the family that got mad and left that I was going to ask about over here, they've come back. I'm so glad my thoughts didn't reach my tongue. And I welcomed them back. Listen, He sees our thoughts. The very second your thoughts are being broadcast in the stereo headphones of God. Have you ever thought about that? God also knows where you go. I love Psalm 139. Look at verse 3. You scrutinize my path and my lying down. You're intimately acquainted with all my ways. Whether you lie down, get up, sit, standing, whatever you're doing, He knows. He knows every place we go, everything we do, every step we take. Proverbs 15:3, the Lord is watching everywhere, keeping His eyes on both the evil and the good. Listen to this. God never takes His eyes off you and me. That's just hard to absorb. Second thing I want you to see, we've got to set a guard on our own lives. First of all, we got to guard our speech. Matthew 12:36-37, but I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give an account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words you shall be justified, and by your words you shall be condemned. Psalm 44:2 says that we need to set a guard on our thoughts. Shall not God search this out? For He knows the secrets of the heart. Look at Psalm 139:23-24. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there's any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. We've got to guard our actions, how we treat people, what we do. Ecclesiastes 12:14. For God shall, listen, bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it's good or bad. And then when those inexplicable things happen to us, and they do, we can take refuge that He is what? He is what? Omniscient. When something happens to us, it doesn't catch Him by surprise. I remember early in our ministry, I got a call that one of my church members had a heart attack. And so I rushed over to University Hospital in Augusta, and I remember going, well, I got through, and I prayed with him. I said, God, thank you. Thank you, thank you for giving us pain. How many times do you ever thank God for pain? The older you get, you don't do that. But that alerts us to the need that if we're having a heart attack, our pains that could be a heart attack, we need to get help. And later on, I saw the son, and did some successful procedure there on the church member's dad, and he said, I thought about what you prayed about. And I said, well, this didn't catch him by surprise. He knew that was going to happen, but He wired us so we could be alerted to it, so we could go get help. Next thing I want you to see here, He is omnipresent. He's with us. I remember walking down the aisle in a church one time with a young, very young pastor. We had to co-officiate a funeral for a baby. That's just one of the hardest things in the world, and I just can't imagine what the parents and the grandparents all feel. And right before we walked in, he said, how are we going to do this? I said, well, I've prayed, I've studied. God's with us. And that's all you can do. That omnipresence means that He is everywhere, present at all times. Psalm 139, David asked the question, is there any place you can escape from the presence of God? And the answer is no, because He's unlimited by time and space. Look at verses 7 through 11 in Psalm 139. Whither shall I go from your spirit? Or whither shall I flee from your presence? If I ascend up in heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, you're there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall your hand lead me and your right hand shall show me. Now write this down. No one can escape the presence of God. Notice what he says. Whether I go up from thy spirit, whether I flee from thy presence, if I ascend up into heaven, you're there. Now listen to what David asked in verse 7. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? In verse 7. How many of you know who Yogi Berra was? One of the most famous catchers for the New York Yankees in the history of the world. I remember watching Whitey Ford and Bobby Richardson, Yogi Berra, all them play on black and white TV when everything was done with tubes. If you're having Sunday lunch, somebody needed to go turn the TV on. By the time you finish lunch, the tubes would be warmed up for you to have a picture if the rabbit ears were planted in the right direction. But here's what Yogi Berra said. He said, I have noticed that everywhere I go, there I am. Everywhere we go, God's here. You know, sometimes we say, we just need God to get on this. We need God to be with us. Have you ever thought about this? God never has to go anywhere. He's already there. And notice this. Distance can't take you from the presence of God. He says there, if I take the wings of the dawn, verse 9 and 10, if I dwell in the remotest parts of the sea, even there your hand will lead me and your right hand will lay hold of me. I remember the first time I ever flew on a plane. I was chosen by the School of Business at Augusta College. It was Augusta College. It's been Augusta State. It's been Augusta University. They still call you for money. It don't matter how many times they change their name. And the School of Business chose me to represent our college at the Foundation for Economic Enterprise in Irvington on the Hudson in New York. I'd never been anywhere but Georgia and South Carolina my whole life. And Daddy didn't like taking vacations, so, you know, it was kind of once every 4 years you might go to the beach for 2 or 3 days. Other than that, we worked in the garden when Dad was on vacation. So, man, I was so excited. They bought me a ticket. I had to go up there to stay a week. There were about 140 or 150 colleges represented at this conference. I'll never forget, I flew out of Augusta, had to change planes in Atlanta, and on the way up, now I had my camera with me. And this is way before those smartphones. And so, well, we started flying. We got about halfway to New York, and we were just flying in the clouds. That was so amazing. I was up next to the window just taking pictures of clouds. This New Yorker looked at me and said, son, is this your first trip to New York? I said, man, this is the first time I've been on a plane. He said, you're going to get killed in New York. I was showing rookie all over the place. But you know, when you think about the clouds, you turn to Psalm 104, verse 3. It says, he makes the clouds his chariot, and he walks upon the wings of the wind. Darkness can't take you further from the presence of God. Psalm 139, look at verse 11 and 12. He says, if I say, surely the darkness will overwhelm me, and the light around me will be night. Even the darkness is not dark to you, and the night is bright as the day. Darkness and light are alike to you. God not only has x-ray vision, he's got infrared vision. He doesn't need night goggles. It says here, his eyes of light can pierce through any darkness. Nothing can hide you. Jeremiah 23:23-24. Am I a God who is only in one place? Asked the Lord. Do they think I can't see what they're doing? Can anyone hide from me? Am I not everywhere in all the heavens and the earth? Ask the Lord. Then we're safe in God's presence. Verse 9 says, if I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall your hand lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. We rejoice in the fact that God is ever present with us. Now let's talk about the omnipotence of God. Now that simply means that he is all powerful. Listen to this. He is able to do anything and able to do all things. Genesis chapter 17, verse 1. God represented himself to Abraham as the Almighty, the El Shaddai, Elohim, meaning God, Shaddai, meaning all-sufficient, all-powerful. Now, we see God's power, the evidence of it, in creation. Psalm 33, verse 9, by the word of the Lord were the heavens made, and all the host of them by the breath of his mouth. He gathered the waters of the sea together as a heap. He lays up the depth of the storehouses. Let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. For he spake, and it was done. He commanded, and it stood fast. How foolish we are in trying to describe the power of God. You know, I can remember the Gemini space flights. I remember the Apollo space flights. We actually had TVs in our rooms. Can you remember the flights? The first flight of John Glenn, orbiting the Earth. I want you to know that his final flight was in 1998. I want you to know he was a Presbyterian elder. And here's what he said after he was on that trip in 1998. He says, looking at the earth from this vantage point, looking at this kind of creation and not believing God, to me is impossible. To see the earth laid out like that only strengthens my beliefs. Long before a space program, Paul said this in Romans 1:20. His observation is, it's impossible not to believe in God when you see what God's hand has done. Now notice that his omnipotence is witnessed in his power. God's power is witnessed in his ability to hold all things together. We were in seminary. Delane got me roped into a class on the book of Hebrews. And our professor was Uri. His last name was Uri, Dr. Uri, and he always talked in a real big hurry. And I couldn't take notes fast enough in there, but I remember Hebrews chapter 1, verse 3, all things, listen to this, all things are held together by the word of his power. Colossians 1, 16 and 17 says this, for by him were all things created, that are in heaven, that are on earth, visible and invisible. Whether there be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created by him, for him. And he is before all things, and by him all things consist. The only reason we are held together as human beings, the only reason this whole universe is held together, is by the power of God. He records that. 2 Peter 3:10, but the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in the which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. The earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up. We see his power in the resurrection. 1 Corinthians 6:14. God has both raised up the Lord and will also raise up us by his own power. So we thank God for his omnipotent power. He gives us eternal life, but one day he'll give us resurrected, glorified bodies. Or if he comes before this physical body dies, we'll be caught up to be with him in the air with our resurrected, glorified bodies. Jesus said, verily, verily, I say unto you, the hour is coming, now is, when the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they that hear shall live. George Gallup, the pollster, once said this, I could prove God statistically if I had to. Take the human body alone and the chance that all the functions of the individual human being would just happen is a statistical monstrosity. David knew when he looked at the physical body. Psalm 139:13. You form my inward parts. You wove me in my mother's womb. He said, I'm not here by fate. I'm not here by F-A-T-E. He said, I'm not here by evolution. I'm here because you created me. I think one of the most horrific murders we've heard about this year was the man who pled guilty yesterday to killing his wife and two children. Some of you saw it on TV. I think that plea came down on election day on purpose. It ought to make people livid. Remember, his wife and two children were missing. His wife was expecting. He had murdered his wife. He came out on television pleading for somebody to bring his wife and children back. But the detective started putting things together. And if you remember, he shot and killed his wife. He buried her in a shallow grave. And then he put his children in two barrels of oil and sealed it up so they wouldn't be discovered. Yesterday, he pled guilty so that he wouldn't have to face the death penalty. But I want you to listen to this. There's one more charge involved there. A fetus. He got charged with destroying, killing a fetus. What do we do in our abortion clinics across this nation every single day? Well, in verse 15 and 16, David says, "My frame is not hidden from you. When I was made in secret and skillfully made in the depths of the earth, your eyes have seen my unformed substance, and in your book were all written the days that were ordained for me." And David says in 139:14, "I'll give thanks to you, for I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well." We'll read something to you very quickly. A man named Michael Behe, B-E-H-E, wrote a fascinating book called Darwin's Black Box. He shows how the tiny human cell alone illustrates the unbelievable complexity and wonder of the human body. Here's what he said. "Shortly after 1950, science advanced to the point where it could determine the shapes and properties of the few of the molecules that make up living organisms. Slowly, painstakingly, the structures of more and more biological molecules were elucidated, and the way they work inferred from countless experiments." He said the cumulative results show with clarity that life is based on machines made of molecules. Molecular machines haul cargo from one place to another along the highways, made of other molecules in your body. Still, other acts as cables, ropes, pulleys to hold the cell in shape. He said machines turn cellular switches on and off, sometimes killing the cell or causing it to grow. Solar-powered machines capture the energy of photons and store it in chemicals. Electrical machines allow current to flow through the nerves. Manufacturing machines build other molecular machines as well as themselves. Cells swim using machines, copy themselves with machinery, ingest food with machinery. In short, highly sophisticated molecular machines control every cellular process. Thus, the details of life are finely calibrated, and the machinery of life enormously complex. Listen to this and think about this. He says the human body contains over 30 trillion of those cellular machines. The genetic information contained in each cell of the human body is roughly equivalent to a library of 4,000 volumes. If you're going to catalog all the genetic information in the body, it would take a library big enough to hold 30 trillion times 4,000 books. We are walking miracles. Now I'm going to quote highly, highly intellectual, well-read paper, The Rolling Stone. I don't read that. But in 2014, one of the reporters for the Rolling Stone interviewed Bill Gates. And if you'd have known the reporter and you knew Bill Gates and his lack of theology, you'd been surprised at this question. The reporter said, "Bill, do you believe in God?" And at that time, the richest man in the world, here's what he said. "I agree with people like Richard Dawkins that mankind felt the need for creation myths before we really began to understand disease and the weather and things like that. We sought false explanations for them. Now science has filled in some of the realm, not all, that religion used to fill. But the mystery and the beauty of the world is overwhelmingly amazing. And there's no scientific explanation of how it came about." Then Gates said, "To say that it was generated by random numbers, that does seem, you know, sort of an uncharitable view. I think it makes sense to believe in God, but exactly what decision in your life you make is different. Because," he says, "I just really don't know." Isn't that sad? To be that wealthy and not even believe in God, much less have a personal relationship with the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Our God is omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent. Evidence surrounds us, and God never leaves our side. Let's pray together. Lord, thank you for meeting with us tonight. We live in a nation, in a world that looks at this and just thinks it's silliness. And we thank you for preserving your word. Thank you for all the evidence that we see around us. And thank you for giving us the ability to walk by faith and not only by sight. Thank you for the difference you make when we have that peace that passes all understanding through a relationship with Christ. And even if we have a simple x-ray or a CAT scan or heart cath or whatever, and we're allowed to witness some of that, well, it's just more evidence of your handiwork. Thank you for always walking by our side. Thank you that you never have to be anywhere because you're already there. Pray that you give us an opportunity as this week goes by, if you should linger, to share this good news of salvation with other people. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Good night.